Okay, James chapter 2, verse 5 is James kind of explaining what he has, what Johnny went over last week, namely James chapter 2, the thesis statement of James chapter 2 can be summed up in verse 1, where James says, "My brothers, do not hold your faith with an attitude of personal favoritism." Okay, so that's his thesis. He's saying, don't think that your salvation is God showing you any sort of favoritism. Okay, and then he goes and gives you what that looks like. Okay, and so last week it was about don't hold your faith in God as if God showed you favoritism over another person, as if we deserve something. We did something special, thereby, you know, we then turn around and, you know, show favoritism, or, you know, favoritism is a 50-50 thing. If you show favoritism to one person or one group, then you're showing disfavoritism to another group, right? And so James is saying, you know, we have no right, okay? And so verse 5 then is a continuation of that explanation, and James working that out, right? This is why I love the Bible. This is why I always say, read it and read it carefully, okay? And for the boys, you know, that I had in small group last year, you know, I always said to you guys, what? Read it carefully. And whenever you meet someone that says, "Oh, I don't understand the Bible," your first question was what? You guys remember? If you meet someone that says, "I don't understand the Bible," Jay, do you remember what I said? If you meet someone that says, "I don't understand the Bible," what did you say?
"Why don't you go read it?"
Yes. Okay. So if you ever meet someone that says, "I don't understand the Bible," your first response is, "Have you read it? And have you read it carefully?" Okay. Because the Bible is not written to confuse us or, you know, be some sort of mysterious thing. So in any case, James chapter 2, verse 5. Let me read again. "Listen, my brothers, did not God choose the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he promised to those who love him?" And so three things that we want to look at: chosen, conferred, and wait for it, promised. Okay. Favoritism is an interesting concept that James is kind of hitting here. James is one of the earliest books of the New Testament. We know this because there are certain words that he uses, such as he uses the word like gathering, for example, instead of church, okay, in chapter 1. Trying to do a real quick scan. It's in chapter 1 when he says when you come together, when you gather together, right? Because that word is synagogue. He uses the word synagogue. Synagogue is actually a Greek word which just simply means to gather together. Okay, and so James doesn't use those Christian words like church, deacons, pastors. Okay, he actually just borrows first century Jewish words. Okay, so we know that when James writes this, the church is still kind of coming together. Okay, it's not set up yet. But the reason why I bring that up is because James hits a very old yet important, I think, temptation for the church, which is favoritism, right? Because if you think about it, favoritism is something that we can say is rampant in the church today, in 2013. However, we see that James talks about it in the first century. So favoritism in the church, you can imagine, you can kind of think of it as it's a problem that we've had for the last 2,000 years. Okay? And that is... And James makes a very, very strong case for why that cannot be. Right? And the first thing is, he says, notice the word, he says, beloved brothers, right? Did not God choose, right? That chosen part, right? And we talked about that a little bit on Friday, at least my group did, right? But the one thing that I want to kind of highlight is that God choosing the church, we are here chosen by God, not because of anything spectacular that we've done, or it's also not a case where God looks into the future and he knew that, you know, Jay was going to love Jesus and he's going to, you know, go be Jay evangelism and he's going to go to North Korea and he's going to get martyred there, right? And stuff like that, right? So, and then God was so impressed with that, that God said, okay, Jay can be chosen. You know, I choose you, Jay Choi. Okay, Jay's like a super Pokemon, right? No, it's not like that. Right? The way that God works in terms of choosing the church or choosing to save the church is simply based on love. Right? And so God has chosen us out of love, and if that is the case, then we have no right to turn around and hate on those who are in the same position. Right? There's so many examples that come to my mind, but the best one, I think, at least for our congregation, our area, would be for those who came over from Korea and are our official citizen status is in processing. It's very harrowing, very confusing times because you don't know what country you owe your allegiance to. Like South Korea, American, I don't understand. I'm in limbo, right? So I was like that. Like when my parents came over to America in 88 and then they applied for citizenship, right? It took them like 10 years to process all that paperwork and all that, they had like go for interview and stuff. The bad thing for me was in that process, I turned 18. Okay, so by the time they got to the end part, they were like, oh wait, Sam has to do his own. So I had to restart my own process by myself on my own. Right? My brother, on the other hand, was still under 18 at the time, so when my parents went and got the citizenship and stuff, they were like, okay, you know, he just kind of got it automatically, right? Which is not fair, right? So my in limbo status is kind of like, it was extended, right? So I feel that pain of some of you guys if you're like, man, you know, Jay, I feel your pain, right? Because you don't know, like, you know, if we go to war, do you fight for the American army, or the Korean army? I don't, you know. So in limbo, right? Now check this out. I still remember the day. I believe it was a nice crispy spring morning. I think it was about April-ish. It's right when the weather starts to turn warm, but not yet like hot, okay? And I remember that was the first time in my life I went to Mount Vernon, right? And I was like, dang, Mount Vernon. I get to take my citizenship oath at the home of George Washington. That's kind of gangster, right? So I was like, okay. So I went and, you know, it was a nice ceremony and, there was some government official guy. He was in charge of the, it used to be called INS, now it's called like something else, I don't know what it is. Anyway, and it was, you know, and I looked at the people that I was doing the thing with, and there was like Hispanic, there was Indians, Pakistanis, Chinese, Koreans. It was like all bunch of people, right? And then at the end, what you do is like, you got to stand up and do the oath. I don't know if y'all have gone through that process, but you stand up and you got to take the oath that you swear that you're not going to blow up the country and you're not going to go crazy and, you know, raise a ruckus. Okay. And I was sitting towards the back, and I was like, man, I'm looking around, and I see all these different kinds of people, right? And bringing to this lesson, how stupid would it be? And I know it's stupid because I do it every day, like currently where I live, okay? How ridiculous would it be that as soon as we got our citizenship, all the people that were there, we turned around, went back to our homes or our neighborhoods or whatever, and then we started looking down on or hating on the people from our home country trying to get citizenship, right? Because I'll be real honest. I live in Annandale, right? So-called Koreatown 1.0. Koreatown 2.0 is Centerville now, okay? But Koreatown 1.0, right? There's still a lot of Koreans in Annandale, right? And a lot of them I know. They're in limbo, right? They're straight up in limbo. Their citizenship status is in processing or just question mark. Or some of them, I'm sure, is like blank. Okay, they don't know where they're supposed to go, right? And we all know who they are, right? They might dress differently. They might talk differently or whatever, right? And I don't know about you, but I hate on them because I'm like, you're ignorant, right? They don't know the rules of the land or whatever. Like, they don't talk cool. They don't do X, Y, and Z, right? So I'm hating on them, right? Especially the Koreans that live in my apartment, in my neighborhood. They're mad ignorant. They're loud, they're noisy, right? They don't care who's there. Like, they're making that kimchi out in public. Like, all the people walking by, they're like, what is that smell? Like, the Korean people just don't care, right? They got Korean pride, right? And I got like two Korean families in my building. They, like, when they make kimchi jjigae, the whole building knows. The whole, you can have your door closed and you still smell it, right? At the same time, like, when the Spanish people, they make like chicken at home, they make like super chicken at home, which is not fair. Okay, I need to make some Hispanic friends. Anyway, but when they make it at home, we smell it. I'm watching TV. What's that smell? Somebody's cooking some chicken. Right? Like, my building is ridiculous. Okay, it has either terrible ventilation or really good ventilation, either way you look at it. Right? But so, anyway, the point being that I was at one point in their shoes. I was in processing. I was, or a lot of them, I was still a Korean citizen that was, in America as a visitor, right? Trying to get a citizenship. And they're in that same shoe. And what I'm doing is pretty ridiculous. And I've really got no grounds to do it because I've been where they are. I turn around and I start hating on them. Right? It's kind of stupid. I mean, just think about that. That makes no sense. Another way to look at it is as if, we were all homeless orphans. Right? We're all homeless orphans. And then one day you got picked up and you got adopted by a very, very rich family. And, man, I met somebody in seminary. He was an older guy. He was telling us, I just got to know him. His name was Joe. And he was an older gentleman. And he was working and he was like, going to school and stuff. And he was telling me that he has like two or three children, natural children. And him and his wife adopted an African-American young lady when she was about 16, 17, and she had a rough life, grew up in an orphanage, in and out of foster homes, and even after they got all the paperwork done, and she was adopted, and, like, legally she was their daughter, right, he said, like, the first year it was really hard for her to understand that. Because she would go to her room and, like, stuff would disappear from her room. They're like, hey, where's your socks? She's like, I don't know. And then they would later find, like, she had, like, a secret stash of her socks and, like, shirts and stuff. Because she was afraid that, if she did something wrong, then they would kick her out of the room, out of the house, and then she would go back to the orphanage where she would have nothing again. Right? So she was so used to that homelessness, right, status, that she got so used to it, so she started like stealing from herself, basically. Right? And she said that even, and he also shared that even when she actually went to high school, graduated, and then went to UVA. She's a very smart girl. And even then, she was she had a hard situation. Like, I think there was a situation where she needed some money for books and stuff, but she didn't think, I need some money for books. I should call my dad. So I think like she got in trouble and she like stole from her roommate or something. And so they called the parents, and they're like, oh, they went down trying to figure out what's going on. They're like, and he was like, why are you stealing? You don't have to steal anymore. Right? Now imagine that girl. I mean, eventually she kind of grew out of that and realized, man, I have a home now. I have a family that cares, right? Imagine, if you will, she turns around and she looks and she meets an orphan, a homeless orphan, and says, you idiot, you stupid orphan. Why are you like this? Da, da, da. Why are you stealing? Da, da, da. Why are you doing this? Stupid, right? It's ridiculous. And that's exactly what James is trying to say. James is saying, hey, we were all orphans. We were not used to having a family. We were not used to having a dad who cares. But then that's what happened. We got adopted. How stupid then is it for us to turn around and hate on those who are trying to be adopted or who have just been adopted and just getting used to having a family. Right? And that's what James is shooting for. Right? Practical application. This is why we have to be a welcoming church. And in Northern Virginia, in the Korean American church community, one of the things that we really, really suck at is welcoming. Especially those who are not Koreans. I know this because I have non-Korean friends that I met in college and in seminary. And they say that when they visit Korean churches, they, for the most part, feel very unwelcome. But James says, we have no right. This is why Paul, in one of his letters, he actually says, remember from where you came. Remember where you used to be before God found you. That's always a good exercise, I think. Remember what we were before Jesus found us. For some of us, it takes a little time to think back. For others, it's not so hard. But it's a good exercise. Remember where you were. Because when you do that, then it's hard. A lot of the things that we do and say and think, you start questioning it. And so James says, hey, guess what? Right now, currently, you are spiritually rich. Though physically you might be poor, you are spiritually rich. Because your daddy owns everything. Right? Your daddy owns everything. However, you got to remember the times when you are spiritually bankrupt. You are spiritually poor. Remember that. Because only then can we actually stop ourselves from judging and hating and not welcoming people. Welcoming is one of the most powerful weapons of the church. Straight up. And I've served in a few churches around the area starting in 2005. And I've served under a handful of senior pastors. Some of them have actually asked me that because before 2005, I was a part of the Open Door youth group team, ministry team. And I was there when My brother and I were actually there when ODPC youth group was 15 kids. Remember that? When we moved to that building for the first time? The praise team outnumbered the kids in the seat on the first Friday we had the meeting in that new building. It was crazy. It was 3 kids in the seats and like 4 kids on the praise team. And so, but God blessed that youth group, blessed the church, you know. And I remember we hit like 30, 40, 50, and then we hit 75, and we're like, okay, we have no seats, so we got a lot of people out, right? And we come up with crazy ideas. And so I've had pastors and elders and parents ask me, you know, what did you guys do? Was there like a special program? Did you guys just play games? Like seriously, some of the parents actually asked me if all we did was just play games. That youth group was so fun, that's why all the kids started coming to church. And I was like, no, actually. I mean, we did have fun, we played games and stuff, but that's not the primary thing. And so they all asked me, what's the number one key? What's that one special thing that ODPC youth group did that none of the other churches are doing? And I said, from my perspective, they welcome newcomers. I gotta tell you, none of them understood what I was saying. What do you mean? I mean, if new people walk in, don't you just say hi and give them a little thing and that's, no. No. We actually had like a whole thing, like the pastor trained us. If you see a newcomer, this is what you do, right? And it was from passages like this, where James says, hey, you can't hate on people that walk in through to your church, no matter what they're dressed like, no matter what, no matter, check this out. I don't think we will have any issues with what people are dressed like when they walk in through our doors for the first time. I think what we'll do is we'll actually judge their spiritual level. And we'll be like, oh, that person is, you know, spiritually like this, therefore, we should do something. Or if they're spiritually like this, then, you know, I don't want to just give up on that. You know, but at ODPC, not because we were anything different or any better than anybody else. We just saw what the Bible said, and the Bible says, hey, if somebody walks into your door, you welcome them. Because honestly, at one point or another, we were that newcomer that walked in. And somebody welcomed us. I know exactly what that feels like. My dad being my brother and I grew up, you know, our dad was always a pastor of a small church. So my brother and I had the opportunity to be members of multiple youth groups in Richmond and in Philadelphia. So when we were in high school, man, we went to like every retreat possible. It was awesome. But, you know, my brother being a more friendly guy, I think he had a little bit easier time, but me not being so friendly, I hated going to a church for the first time and not knowing anybody. And some of you guys heard the story that, you know, when I first moved to Nova in 1999, there was a church that I went to for 3 months. No one said anything. No one even said hi to me. And then after 3 months, somebody said, hey, are you new? Yeah, 3 months ago. Nice try, buddy. Let me tell you how that made me feel like. That made me feel like unwanted. That made me feel like, well, what the heck? Why am I even getting up for this church? That made me definitely feel like, what kind of picture of God are they painting for me? Not a good one. On the flip side, I just end with this one example, one story, testimony. There was a young guy who, honestly, he was just one of those kids just kind of floating through life. And I think he was about 11th grade or so when he started coming out to church. I think around his senior year or so, that's when he met God. And he got baptized, and when he got baptized, you know, we asked him to share his testimony. And he shared and everything. And one of the things, and the pastor was like, "So, what made you come back to church? After your first visit to our church, what was the reason that made you come back the second time?" He said, "Welcoming." And we said, "What do you mean?" And he shared in his testimony that he visited every church in his area because he had friends in every church. He said, "The reason that kept me coming back to this particular church was that when I came, somebody shook my hand and said, 'Hi, how are you doing? What's your name?' And I was never alone. That whole Friday, he came on a Friday evening. I was never alone." He doesn't remember what the Bible study was about. Okay? Doesn't remember what we did. All he remembered was when he walked in, somebody shook his hand and said, "Hi, how are you doing? What's your name?" "My name is dot, dot, dot." And then when he was leaving, he said this was the clincher. This is the number one reason why he came back the next week. When I was leaving, that person who greeted me when I walked in said, "Hey, it was great having you." The person's name. "I hope I'm going to invite you to come back." He said, "I've never been to a church where they remember my name after the first 5 minutes. And I've never been invited back to any of those churches." He said, "The number one reason why I came back was because that person remembered my name and they invited me back." Favoritism is a terrible cancer, terrible virus in the church. It's been around for 2,000 years. And unless we actively fight against it, it's going to kill us. It's going to kill us. And when I say newcomers, I don't just mean just people coming to our church for the first time. I'm also talking about seventh graders coming up. All right, I'm looking at Harvard, looking at Kristen. We got to do a better job welcoming newcomers. Remember where we come from. Remember where we're going. And so I end with the words of James. He says, "Listen, my brothers who are beloved, who are loved by God, didn't God choose us, the poor, the overlooked, the spiritually bankrupt in this world, to be rich in faith and heirs and sons and daughters of the kingdom?" Now then, let's stop acting like homeless orphans. Start acting like the adopted children of God. Let's pray.